First of all is the Rev and the CRM product that I had brought up at our last UDA meeting. And there was direction from the board to get more of an idea of the financial side of purchasing the CRM. So I did include some of those numbers in my report there. So initially when the Rev group applied through Smith for that additional $200,000 grant, we accounted to have $5,400 go towards technology, and none of those funds have been used as of today. So I included the costs for the two different CRMs that I got demos for. Between the two of them, I did think that the Executive Pulse was the better of the two options, and this also happens to be the more cost-effective option between the two. So you can see that there'd be some upfront costs that would be just shy of $4,000 there, and then monthly charges beyond that, that would be $3,000 total for the next 24 months with the 5% discount that we would get with that. So I do think that moving forward with the CRM would be a very good idea. We've talked amongst the EDA about becoming more proactive as a unit, and I do think that having the CRM is in line with that. It also produces some really nice reporting data that I think would be good to have for all of us here, that we can really track what has happened with each report that comes out. So the Rev team discussed it as well, and that was the direction from the Rev team to go forward with the CRM with those funds that we have available. So if there's any questions about that, I can answer, or
Where would the $1,400 come out of our budget?
Let's see here.
Does it come out of the 2025 or the 2026 budget?
It could probably be it depends how quickly they can get it rolling once they get the go ahead. But let's see here.
How much of that is up front too, and how much do you pay over? I mean, it says monthly payments, I'm sure those will be something we'll have to pay out of as we go forward through budgets. Right.
Potentially, or we could
front load that.
Probably could do that too.
Because I mean, realistically, you probably have space in this year's budget to front load it, and then you wouldn't have to have it in the next year's budget.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
but the
and while you're looking that up, also the next question is after the 24 months, what kind of fees are there?
Let's see. Well, in the quote that they gave us, it was $175 monthly. So if that's good for 2 years, I mean, they might increase it after then. But it's $175 a month. So that's where I got the $3,000 from. Mm-hmm.
But you'd want to see how effective it was, too.
Right.
If it's getting utilization, then after a two-month period, if it's not, then I mean, we probably would drop it, I would imagine.
Right.
And if it is, then we may look at maybe making that a permanent, you know, if it's people, a lot of people are getting value out of it, then we want to continue to support
that. Just making sure we're thinking ahead of where the money's coming from.
I mean, I would suggest that we try to look at seeing if we can front load it again. That way,
yeah, that makes sense.
Put a pin in at the end of this
year,
and then you don't have to worry about it going forward, especially if we have some space in some of the line items.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, I guess that would be my question is, do we have, I mean, if we have room on our budget, it looks like maybe we're about eight. Reading this correctly, maybe we're about 8,600. Are we 86? Do we have about $8,600 available on our budget currently?
Yeah, that's the for the rest of 2025. That's the amount we have left beyond all of the remaining fees and everything.
I mean, so yeah. I mean, right now we're coming right in because you're going to have another. whatever, $4,800 or something in terms of your wages and benefits for this period, for December, right? So you take that out of the 86, that leaves you with, you know, say $3,600, that seems like would slide in really well then.
Yeah.
I mean, if we have the room on the budget and it's not, I mean, it also looks like we had budgeted about $12,000 to go towards commercial programs.
Right.
Looks like we have $4,000 remaining on that.
No, eight.
Yeah.
Sorry, $8,000.
$8,000 remaining.
$8,000 remaining on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like it probably could be a line that you could go out of.
Yeah, I would. And, you know, and then it, I mean, it also leverages some of like the available rev grant money, you know, so I like that it leverages another resource. But yeah, I'd probably lean towards pulling it out of the commercial, the 414 commercial programs line. And then it sounds like it shouldn't be the thing that necessarily kicks us over budget on the entire year either, so I think that's good. So the we're suggesting front loading
$1,400.
$1,400. Well, is it if we front load though, isn't that another isn't it like $3,000?
No, that's what's left out of the after you pay out of the rev.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Okay, so we just need $1,398
yep.
total.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I would motion that do we recommend for approval on this?
Yeah, or? I think that'd be fine.
Okay. So I motion that we recommend for approval to council $1,398 out of line 414 commercial programs to go towards the purchase of a two-year contract for the Executive Pulse CRM in partnership with the REV budget.
Yes, thank you, Tom.
I have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Any other questions, concerns? We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? There you go, Ian.
Good. Thank you. I look forward to putting that into action.
Just one thing, as you're talking about the budgets just a little bit, just so you're aware, you know, I think members who've been on the board for a little while know we have that TIF district downtown. So speaking with Sarah, you know, our plan this year is to close that TIF district, which would be about, I don't know, $80,000 or something like that. That'll be able to put back into the EDA's budget. Originally, it was for demolitions and for some excavation of a building that was derelict or burned down or whatnot, and the EDA fronted the cost at that time. So when they created that TIF district, the hope was that eventually it would repay itself. Well, that hasn't come to fruition. I think this was, I don't know how long ago it was, 15, 20 years ago, but we think we have enough funds, kind of we're going to scrape together enough at the city side to make that transfer so we can close that. The nice thing about that is that if something were to happen on those downtown lots, then, you know, we'd have ability to do a new project. You know, for example, like if you went to building right now, you know, the nice thing about TIF is that we can give you some funding to try and help you. Well, it has $80,000 in the negative. So right now, your taxes for the next 15 years or 20 years would be going towards paying that down. Well, instead, now it'll be basically a blank slate. Plus, it'll give us a little bit more money for the EDA. So we're going to try and scrape together enough to try and close that from the city's, you know, budget from reserves that we have. That way, the EDA will be 100%. We can close that fund line. So just wanted to let you know about that.
Anything else on your coordinators?
Yep, just a few things. You'll see that the city was successful in getting a $500,000 grant from the Greater Minnesota Infrastructure Grant Program. So,
have you followed up with them, Ian, to contact the folks at the Minnesota Housing to see if we can get that contract signed?
I have not, but I will make a note to do that.
Sounds like a good idea for the end of the year.
Yep.
No, it was quite a bit of work that went into that, so I appreciate Ian's time and staff time, my time, and you know, it's going to be a really beneficial thing for us because it'll be extending utilities and helping us to extend utilities and rebuilding the frontage road to that western half of that property. It's about 20 acres or so, and you know, some of it we've seen designs for different options, possibly housing, townhomes, that sort of thing, but, you know, without the funding, we wouldn't be able to do this project. We're still not 100% sure. What's another one of those ones I have to kind of scrape together some city money to try to figure out how we're going to pay for our half of it, but a good project anyways, because it'll help with utilities down there, so.
Yep.
Congratulations on getting the award. I mean, that's a big process, so.
Yeah, so we've got the Windsor Court expansion that sale transacted and everything, so that'll be, I mean, they're wanting to get in there as soon as possible, so now it's just a matter of putting the project in and getting the west half redeveloped, so really good stuff there. Let's see, I also went to a data center forum back in November. It was in Mankato. I thought it was pretty interesting. They had quite a few different speakers there, including Senator Nick Frenz. I thought he had a really nice perspective on it from the legislative side of things. I mean, with the data centers, there's concerns from the environmental impacts, but I guess the senator's perspective on it was that, like, Minnesota has a lot of environmental regulations already, so it's like a good thing if we get data centers here where you have those environmental regulations compared to if they go somewhere else where they're much more lax in that side of things, so. That was interesting. They also had another gentleman, Thomas Jackson, who has a lot of experience designing these data centers, and a really interesting takeaway that I got from him was that the new data centers that are being built today don't actually use all that much water. They don't use, like, evaporative cooling, which is, like, the really big water users. I thought that was pretty interesting. If anyone else is interested, they are having more data center forums coming up later this month and then in January as well.
So. What do you guys think about data centers? That's something that I know at staff level we've kind of kicked around looking at pursuing a project. There's a couple projects in the area, like Pine Island has an extremely large one. I don't think we'd be looking at anything at that size. I think that's like 100 megawatt, kind of a hype. Because there's different levels.
Yeah.
We could talk, there's like your hypers. Scalers, that's like your Metas and your Googles, like those are the really big ones, like Rosemount, they're building a big one up in Rosemount, it's 700 megawatts, it's an Excel project. We've looked at potentially, you know, for Casson, like the niche for us is like, kind of like Egan's, you know, like that's nice building, you know, some jobs, good tax base add, because we really can't support, even if I wanted to get a meatpacking plant or something like that, it isn't going to really work, because, you know, we'd all be employees. The wages don't work, the housing doesn't really work to add 250 people or something like that. It just, you know, it doesn't, and it, you know, for the community, we want to make a good fit for the community, but I guess I'm interested in what you guys think of that, because that is a project we've talked about, you know, nice tax base growth. I mean, usually it's, you know, a good, you know, like, for example, if we were looking at a 10 or 12 or 15 megawatt, which is a good amount, but it's much smaller. It's on 2 to 3 acres, typically those buildings are. You know, it might look a lot like Egan does. I mean, it's kind of that big of a, kind of a building, you know, it's a good power user. We only need electric utility in Casson, so that's a benefit to us. The other benefit is that it's a consistent load, you know, so for like, for the city, like our peak load is during the day and then at night drops way down. Whereas we're paying for, I mean, this much power anyways, so it makes sense to try to flatten that out a little bit. If we could say, okay, our load's going to be say 10 megawatt data center, that's a consistent load. You know, the water thing is the biggest thing I've always been concerned about because, you know, here's the problem, you know, for these communities like Pine Island, for example, like, okay, how much is it going to cost you to build new wells and new water infrastructure, and then you have an issue with your population, because obviously our residential residents, our school comes first. You don't want to take away from those and detriment to them. I also don't want to add a lot of extra cost. Now, a lot of times the data center, you can get them to pay for infrastructure. You can say, hey, well, we're not going to let you build here unless you build a new well for us, because that's what you need. To Ian's point, you know, I've seen models where they either use air cooling, that's pretty loud, so you don't necessarily want that to be like in city limits, you know, if you're on the countryside, you deal. Or they use what's like a circular system, where initially you might have to pump in, you know, 400,000, 500,000 gallons of water, but then it just goes in a circle. Like, it heats up, it cools down, they have a big, that's basically what it in essence is. Or they use some kind of coolant, which isn't unlike, for example, like the ice arena here. you know, we just replaced the coolant this year. It was there since it was built. There were some interesting plants and animals growing inside of that, you know, coolant that was 30 years old. But it, I mean, for 30 years, that's what they did. It was a closed-loop coolant system. So I think those models are much more feasible than saying, hey, you're going to use 500,000 gallons of water a day. We're not going to, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in your feedback because it's something we've talked about maybe pursuing a project like that next year or two.
So the one in Pine Island, too, you know, being I worked here, so I hear a lot about it. They're purchasing 400 acres. The company that wants to put it in, they only need 20 acres.
Yeah.
So the rest they would want to sell off. They put up a 300,000 square foot building is what they're looking at on that 20 acres. They figured their water usage would be equivalent to putting or less than putting homes in there. That's what they've got figured. And they are paying 100% of the infrastructure, everything. They're not asking the city for nothing other than to annex them in and let them do it.
Yeah. And I mean, think, and the one up in Cannon Falls is similar. And the interesting part of that one in Cannon Falls is that, and one of the reasons I think it didn't have as much pushback, is because the land that they bought already had like a pivot well irrigation system.
Mm-hmm.
So the farmer was already permitted to pump 41 million gallons of water a year anyways. So the data center was only going to be 43 million. So really it wasn't like a huge net increase up there. Now here we don't necessarily see that kind of model. And I'm still not sure that I would necessarily want to see that big of a...
Right.
Because I don't know if that would really be better. You know, 400 acres, that's a huge amount.
Yeah. Well, that, yeah, and, you know, they did
great
that.
To see somebody, you know, we want more, you know, good-paying, high-paying jobs for the community, but I also want to make sure that our residents come first before we would sacrifice anything like that.
And on that one up there, too, they're also on Xcel Energy.
Right.
And Xcel's already committed to them that they'd have the power capacity.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason they're coming to this state, according to them up there, is because it's cold. And
yeah, too, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't
so
have to.
They're saving a ton of money in the spring, fall, and winter when it's cold.
Where would it go? I mean, like something like that. Like where?
Yeah, that was my question.
Well, I mean, if you're looking at something that only needs 2 or 3 acres, then there's lots of options.
Yep.
I mean, right? I mean, you know, I think we would want to necessarily, we would want to keep it away from, you know, from
residential,
directly being affected by residential. But, I mean, a good example would be right out here. I mean, you could say, okay, if you only need 3 acres, well, we've got 2-acre-and-a-half parcels right across the street from City Hall, right across from SEMCAC. They could buy that land, and they could just build a building, and there it is.
The bus transport, I can't remember their name over it.
SEMCAC,
yeah. Well, the bus owned...
Rolling Hills
owned the property next to them.
Yeah.
They've sold it SEMCAC. SEMCAC's putting it back for sale.
Oh, really?
So there'll
I mean, you know, I
so there's another lot that's going to be sitting.
Land, I mean, we have, well, I mean, a good example would be, you know, some of the land that you still have, Mr. Marty owns that property on the south, some property on the south side. I don't know, I think there's a couple options for good parcels.
I mean, you know, we've seen that development map earlier, and maybe that's something to bring back in the new year, Ian,
yeah.
Maybe that development map of where we have land that's available.
You know, most of our residential growth has been on the north side. So I don't know that it would be on that side, but I could kind of see on the east side maybe there's some options for sure. But I don't know.
It doesn't hurt to look.
That's a good question, Tom. I think that's something we can maybe identify.
You know, it doesn't hurt to look, especially when most of those are willing to come in and pay for everything just because they...
Well, and part of it's the size. I mean, if they only need, like I said, 2 to 3 or 3 to 5 acres,
yeah.
That's much more manageable than, you know... Obviously, it'd be great if some farmer, if they bought from a farmer and then they wanted to be annexed in. I mean, like, we wouldn't have anything to do with it then. We'd just say, okay, yep, we're going to serve you. I mean, I don't want to necessarily get involved more than we have to.
Right.
But, you know, we always want the private sector to be the catalyst, right? But at the same time, it's just one of those ones where, you know, are we even willing to put ourselves out there?
Well.
You know, because some communities are not interested.
You got to remind everybody, when you pull this out, that's what data centers are for.
Right.
Everybody keeps pulling their phones out and now Google why they don't want a data center, but then they forget where they just data just came from.
Right. Well, and I mean, I read about a lot about it. It's, you know, realistically, it's going to be the United States or it's going to be China.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be data centers. It's just a matter of where they're going to go and how can they be managed properly.
Yep. I'm sure if you get to work with a company that's looking, you know, you can lay out your plans.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't hurt for us to at least start thinking about it, looking ahead.
I think site selection might be a really good idea, would be bring in a development map and say, okay, if we were going to even look at this, or somebody, because we do get people that propose stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Just very lightly, it hasn't been, you know, we haven't really pursued it, but there's people like, well, because we do own our electric utility, and they do like working with municipal utilities, because especially those smaller, you know, companies, it's a nicer, it's a better relationship with them. A lot of times the power is less expensive than it is at Excel. So I think that'd be a good idea to start off with, maybe just look at some sites.
Sure.
I guess my opinion on it would be, you know, I wouldn't say like a just a absolute blanket no on principle. I also wouldn't just say yes, blanket yes, good, bigger the better, right? Mm-hmm. I would say, yeah, probably smaller, and it would have to be in definitely like the right spot. So to me, it would come down to a lot of specifics about where, what size, yeah, what kind of cooling technology are they using?
Sure.
Yeah, what kind of, you know, what kind of load benefits does it provide our utility? What kind of, yeah, I mean, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, I think for the right project, it might make sense for us. But yeah, I wouldn't want it to create, you know, a huge, yeah, some kind of like huge water problem or...
Oh, I think I'm very cognizant of that because that's always been my biggest concern is the water. I mean,
yeah.
A lot of times they end up having to do their own backup generation and things like that. I mean, something like that one up in Rosemont, I think they're going to have like 500, you know, 1.5 megawatt diesel generators for their backup power. So in case it does go down, they're just going to crank them all on, which we talk a lot about the environmental aspect of it. In Minnesota, we have pretty strong environmental rules, but, you know, here they're going to just crank it up with the diesel gen. It's like, well, maybe the nuclear plant would make more sense than, you know, doing that. But, you know, hopefully that's something the legislature will look at next year as that moratorium. So, no, if you have thoughts about it, I appreciate that feedback because it is something that the EDA may look at more next year if we do get a proposal or something like that. So, and if you can bring that back in January with the development map, I think it'd be
great.
Yep. Yeah, I would say mapping would be my first thought.
Yeah. Okay. Good direction, thank you. Just another couple of things here. EDA board membership, going to be seeing some changes here. First of all, Kathy, thank you very, very much for your many, many years of service to the EDA.
Well, I must say, the two of you have been such an outstanding team. I've seen a lot of people come and go that has serviced our community, but you two have been top notch.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate the work and efforts you put in for our community as a whole.
Thank you. I did make a little certificate.
Oh,
look at that.
Well, thank you.
Maybe we should take a picture.
Yeah,
you have a camera.
Thank you.
I've got my pocket here. Okay, good. You got to have her hold it up and then, you know.
Yeah.
Center ditch, it swings.
Oh.
See?
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy.
Yeah, thank you. It's been fun, actually.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. So, other than Kathy, of course, Councilperson Brian Wempner has resigned from his position, so that leaves a vacancy on our EDA board. Of course, Ken Quatrin also is a vacant seat on the board. In my report, you did see that Albert Brand from Kratos has sent in an application to serve on the board, so pending confirmation, we'd have him joining in January as well. So there's that.
I have on the EDA board, I was going to say, I presently serve on behalf of the Casson Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
I term out of being president.
I see my smile on his face there.
I was going to say, I would be interested in serving on a regular seat, and then I think we would have to talk to the chamber about who they're... I don't know if they have anyone else that's excited about being on the EDA, but I do think it is an important relationship, so they'd have the new board would have to figure it out. But that would also kind of help potentially with a spot.
Well, that'd be good.
I don't know if you want me to, like, resubmit a new application.
I don't think it'd be necessary, Tom, if you're just conserving, again, it'll be looking at recommendations, I think, on the 10th of December, the ones he has.
More the chamber person, I suppose, would.
Yeah, when they would come in there, the board constitute, then they could see if they have somebody that they are interested in, for sure, yeah.
Good, good. All right, and then just last thing on my report here, Christmas in Casson is coming up this Saturday with a glow parade on Friday evening. The EDA did contribute $250 towards that celebration, so if you're around, it'd be nice to come out and participate. I unfortunately won't be able to make it. Let's see, and neither will Santa's reindeer, but I hear we'll be getting a live nativity scene instead.
Yeah, he did. I just heard about that, Tom.
Yeah.
You taking the reindeer out for a spin there, Ian?
Well, yeah.
That's what I thought. Yes. So that's something
yeah,
like.
I can explain more because I've been in the depths of the figuring that the live animal stuff out. Our reindeer farmer that we've been working with the last couple of years had reached out end of October to say that his he had some kind of illness go through the herd, killing the reindeer. Due to the federal government shutdown, he was unable to order his herd replacements because they have to travel across state lines, and reindeer are classified as exotic animals, and therefore they were not issuing exotic animal interstate travel permits. And so he just said, yeah, he's got them ordered, but they won't be here until, like, next year.
I know, I was going to say. I think it's back up and running again.
I need that lump of coal. Come on.
I was going to say, well, it doesn't, yeah, I mean, Santa Claus as a, I think as a, what's the, when you have that executive immunity on behalf of other countries?
Diplomatic immunity.
His own little rules.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's, you know, it's like when you have, like, the president of another nation here, there's a level
diplomatic immunity.
So, anyways, general commercial reindeer trade, an important export of the North Pole, does not fall under quite the same immunity rules. Anyways, we decided that it would be better to get something different than hauling the dead carcasses of the reindeer out. And NextEra, the sponsor of it, agreed with that. I said we could put your banner up over their dead bodies, and it's like, no, we're good. So we're doing live nativity. That's going to be animals are in partnership with Red Barn Learning Farm.
Sure.
So that'll be good. We'll have my own sister and her family is reprising the role of the people because they've got a baby, so that'll work.
There'll be a dinosaur in the background, kind of.
Pom 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 pom. No.
Yeah. We.
That might not wait.
Yeah. I will not be in the dinosaur. I'm actually going to be a tour guide on one of the trolleys.
Ooh. All right.
That's where I'll be if you're looking for me. Doing that. And then we actually, apparently live nativity animals, significantly less expensive than reindeer. So we also had some extra money that we bought a giant inflatable snow globe with, currently sitting in my dining room at home, that we'll put up. And then it's like 13 foot diameter, so you can, like, you actually, like, open it up and, like, go inside of it. And then you can do, it's like a photo op.
Oh,
type,
fun.
Type thing.
Cool.
So that'll be good. And then...
Where's the live nativity scene going?
It's going to be right where the reindeer would have been. Okay. Yeah, it works well because they need the same type of fencing and livestock trailers.
Sure.
So that it works really well in being able to set up kind of the same fencing and whatnot. It'll actually be, I think, a very similar structure, just different animals. But yeah, I think we called, again, I checked with the various there's only so many reindeer farms in Minnesota, and I actually talked with a reindeer broker, that guy that doesn't actually have a technically a farm per se, but is more of a trades reindeer, but he was also unavailable, so they're no dice on the reindeer, which was to be expected. They did, like, that first Saturday of December is like peak reindeer display time, so it's no good. Anyway, But yeah, we're going to have Glow Parade. We have about I think it's 18 floats signed up for the Glow Parade. We'll run from Cass and Fire Hall down Main Street to the dump road up, and then we'll wrap into Riverside Park.
Fun.
And Vanderbilt's got its tree lighting and stuff. We will have, the trolleys going. We have a simplified trolley circuit this year. We're going to run two trolleys with three stops, basically running from Hy-Vee, Hidden Pines, Hubble House, and back. We had too many traffic, too many variables in running four trolleys with nine stops last year that caused clumping of trolleys, which was a big problem. So we're just going to not do that.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm sure it'll be fun. We're, you know, like I said, we're trying kind of a couple different things. So come on down.
Awesome. That sounds good.
Yes.
Well, and cross-coordinating with Manorville was big.
Yep.
This year.
Yeah. Yep. That was a big kind of a new element as well. On holidays, joint stuff that. Yeah. So yeah, it'll be. I'm excited to see how it turns out.
Any more, Ian?
Nope, that'll be it.
Next will be City Administrator's Report.
Sure, and I talked a little about the data center issue already, so that's something that, like I said, I know we're pursuing. City budget, we've got a budget meeting tomorrow night. The county printed the wrong dates on the tax statements, which I still haven't got mine yet.
I don't know
if you got yours in town here.
Not mine yesterday.
Did you? I was supposed to come yesterday. I didn't get any yesterday, so with the post, I'm sure they're overwhelmed, whatever. Hopefully I'll get today, because then I can take a look at it. But they put on December 10th instead of the 3rd, even though we told them we were having the hearing on the 3rd. So we'll have a budget meeting tomorrow, and then we'll probably end up just having to finalize it on the 10th, which is okay. I want to make sure that any member of the public mm-hmm. who sees that and thinks it's going to be on the 10th has a chance to give us their feedback. And we have cut it down from the initial preliminary budget. It's down about 1.5%. So that's good, moving in the right direction. We'll see if there's anything else council would like to cut out of next year's budget. Otherwise, that's going smoothly. Let's see here. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be that time of the year where it's starting to quiet down. We're doing a lot of different things. The council approved a large electric system improvement, which is some battery storage as well as a small solar project here in Casson. So that's exciting. We also got permission from the folks at Excel to begin a facility study, which would be how we could implement our own substation, which would be something we would need to have if we did pursue a project with like a data center or something like that. Other than that, yeah, looking for boards and committees. So obviously Ian talked about that. If anyone you know is interested, that's something we could look at. We'd love to have a nice full board, because I'd like to get lots of different feedbacks and opinions. The other thing that Ian and I did a couple of days ago last week was actually meet with some folks from CARE, the architect at the old school, and Jerry Geese. Had a good meeting with them, I thought. Really interesting to see where they're at. And you know, Jerry had brought up maybe a different concept, which, you know, after talking with him about, you know, I think it could have some value potential of maybe looking at doing something different, because it sounds like apartments may not work at that building, just because there are a lot of factors with the historic costs and things like that. That I think developers are finding it to be more difficult to actually build it and make it work cash flow wise. But one thing he brought up was looking at maybe some kind of facility where it maybe would have internal pickleball, possibly basketball, some things like that. So I think there may be some value to that. So Ian's connected Jerry with Nick Poshius, who was here earlier this year, who with the House of Hoops. I know Nick has been in contact with Ian quite a bit this fall, trying to figure out how he's going to do it. You know, one of the thoughts I had was, well, you know, if there's already a basketball gym, you know, there's a gymnasium in that old school, I mean, maybe there's a way to market it where it could be, you know, maybe he owns that part of the building, and maybe you can get somebody to put a gym in it. You know, I mean, there's just different things that might be more cost effective than it's got a great location. It's centrally located. It's a beautiful old building. I haven't been in the building for a couple of years now, so I have to get in there again and take a look. But it's interesting how it breaks down, where you kind of have, you know, you've got two wings, and then you've got the center area, which has got the cafeteria underneath and the gym, you know, the basketball court above. And so, I mean, potentially you could, you know, if you didn't have to put apartments in, it cuts down on your you know, plumbing, electrical, a lot of those individual costs if you're trying to put individual, you know, whereas I could say if one wing was, hey, we just put a nice floor in and that's pickleball courts and you light it and you have ventilation, there's still some things you'd have to do because it's, unfortunately, it's not in great shape inside, but, you know, that could be something that relatively low cost, you know, the gym itself, upgrading the basketball court a little bit, that could be something. And then on the other side, I was like, hey, what we really need is some things for the children, for the families in town in the wintertime. You know, and I know, you know, some people go over to the rack over in Rochester, you know, for a lot of folks financially, that may not be an option. You know, I've looked at it myself, but just driving over to Rochester, you know, if you're going to get the membership, you've got to use it. You've got to use it. And if you have to drive there every day and drive back every day, it just seems like, you know, it's kind of out of the realm for a lot of folks financially. So I don't know. I think he wanted to know what the next steps were, so we connected him with Nick, got the information to him, and you know, if they've got their thoughts on it, you know, I told him, and I talked to the mayor, you know, we're always open to looking at some kind of proposal, but it would have to be one that's predicated largely on making sure there's enough tenants to fill that building up properly. So otherwise, you know, it's a tough situation, and I understand that. So no, it was a good meeting, though, and I appreciate them, you know, chatting with us, and the architect was on the call, too, so... But I think that's all I've got for today.
Thank you, Tim. 2026 Ready investment. That's like $5,000?
Yep. $5,000 again for 2026, same as it was this year. I know we've been having the monthly meetings that I've been attending and along with Tim and Tom on occasion. I think those have all been going, you know, pretty smoothly, pretty well. I do think I would like to see a bit more maybe direct support from the Ready folks here in Casson as far as, I mean, it would be great if we could get like a lead or something more from them, more than what we've received from them in the past. I do think that it's good to have the continued partnership with the other small cities in the area and with Ready, just keeping having those conversations and those longer term economic development strategic plans as well. So I would recommend investing again in Ready for 2026.
So I know we haven't gotten a lot from them yet for lead. Do you go back to them and just say, you know, we feel like we're getting some benefit, but we're not getting full value for what we're spending?
Well, I think we have gone back, and John Wade came and presented it, I don't know, last month or whatever, to the council. I mean, I've told him in the past, like, you know, yes, it's good to talk to other cities, but we can do that at a different level, too. I mean, I can always talk to Bill Schimmel from Stuart Miller, Elizabeth and Pine Island, or whoever, you know, like that aspect of it, and... you know, I think, you know, talking with Ian, he's recommending to move forward. It's like, I feel like we want to try it one more year. But I think if we don't get anything, and like 2 years ago, and Tom will remember this, 2 years ago they had that nice kind of housing symposium that was over in Byron. And that has some value for us. Like, so contributing to help make sure that kind of happens is interesting. Like, this year there really wasn't anything they did. You know, and they're on the fringes of a lot of little projects.
Yeah.
They're helping a little bit with like some of the things Smith's doing. I mean, they're looking at these housing studies.
Yep.
Almost the county paid for their housing study. And here in Dodge County, it was Dodge County and Casson paid for the housing study. So it wasn't like they paid for some of that stuff.
Yep.
And so it's not that it's a bad group, but I do think after talking with Ian, like, we'd like to try it one more year, but I think, you know, definitely making sure that they know that unless there's something tangible, like, it's hard for us to prioritize that, especially at that level. It'd be one thing if it was like $500. Well, you know, it's good to have that input then to hear what people are doing. But $5,000, that's a lot for what we're getting out of it.
I guess I would go back to them with, and I hate to call it an ultimatum, but I'd go back and say, you know, we're not seeing our bang for a buck. We'd like a discount this year. And if they say no, you know, we can still give them the option this year. But then if we see nothing, we're definitely out next year. But I would tell them that.
Yeah.
We're not seeing anything substantial for what we're giving you, and it feels like all the other communities are benefiting and not us.
Well, I know that a lot of the other communities have this debate too. Like, I mean, even if they are benefiting, like Stuartville has seen a lot of different projects go into their industrial park.
Look at their new Amazon.
The Pig Heart project and a couple other ones that Amazon. How much that was related to Ready, though?
I don't know.
You know, they're in a really good location.
Yes.
They're right off of I-90 and 63. So,
boy, it's a great spot for, you know, commercial traffic off of the highway.
Could we go back and offer them less this year and see if they take it?
We always can. I don't think they will. I certainly think that, you know, one easy way to do it is say, hey, we're not going to pay you $5,000 upfront.
Yeah.
We'll give you $2,500 now, and if we see anything beneficial in 6 months, we'll give
them.
You know, they'll take that because.
I'm fine with that. I just
think that might be the best.
That might give them an incentive to want us to pay the extra $2,500.
And they're nice people.
Oh, they are.
Like, I don't have a problem with it, but there is a level of duplicate. You know, you were at that meeting with Semblin, the Southeast Minnesota League of Cities, and some of the ready folks were there, you know, like, but there are other groups that do that.
Yes.
And the amount of dues that we pay, for example, for Semblin, I think it's
$50.
$50. And that's where I'm kind of,
again,
that is fine. You know, we get a lot
more out of our $50.
Cost benefit is always the thing. Like, if you pay a little bit and you don't get a ton, well, it's still worth it. If you pay a lot and you don't get anything, well, it's kind of hard to justify, so.
Well, I'd make the motion that we give them $2,500, or propose that we give them $2,500 for the first 6 months, and then we'll see how the next.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think I would tell them that probably the two things that we would like some more hands-on assistance with, that I think they would be better suited to help with, would be, data center site selection. I mean, I think they probably have a sense of, like, what are the shovel-ready things that we need in site consideration. And then I think secondly would be their input on, you know, this thing with the care building. If we're talking about some kind of a deal, I mean, I think that's also kind of up.
No, that actually kind of was something I thought about too, Tom. I appreciate you bringing it up because I feel like, you know, Ready has all these ins with Mayo, and it's like if Mayo is throwing money around like crazy, not Mayo, but the Upward Bound, Beyond, whatever the name of their campaign is. But to me, like something like that where it's maybe health and wellness related, that should be right in their, you know, bailiwick. And, you know, we're not talking about them paying for all of it.
Right.
Because, you know, you have to have private sector involvement. You've got to, somebody has to be willing to take the risk and say, hey, I'm going to start a business, I'm going to run it out of here, like Mr. Poshius is with his basketball, you know, business. But, I mean, for them to say, yeah, we can put a couple $100,000 into helping get a project going, or maybe they help pay for a cost so the building can be transferred to somebody else other than CARE. If I don't know that CARE really wants to continue to own it, right? You know, that seems like really low-hanging fruit to me, where they can say, hey, we have these development pots of money, and it goes into this or this or that. Maybe this is an incubator building, okay, or something that, you know, because if you don't have to build all the apartments in, you've got two big empty buildings and then kind of one that's got a little bit more to it. But I think that's a good one. And that's a good concrete project. We can say, hey, John Wade, come over here, take a look at this. Hey, Ready folks, come and take a look at this.
Yep.
What can we do? Because even if there's a waste of space there, like even if I don't need that whole wing of the building for my business, I mean, you could get something in there operating at least to start things off. I mean, I look it over at like West Concord, you know, the old school over in West Concord, probably underutilized space. But there is a business in there, you know, using it. And even if they don't need the whole parking lot and they don't need all the classroom space, I mean, it's better than having it continue to be kind of, unfortunately, you know, vacant. So, no, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I think when I feel like when we're on those calls, I feel like a little bit of the vibe I get is I think they want to be useful. I think sometimes they are kind of at a...
They don't know what to do.
They need some kind of direction from, like, what would we find helpful?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we give them a couple, you know, I mean, then it's kind of in their court, right? Like, if they come back and do something really great, then awesome. And if they don't, then I guess then we know.
Yeah. Kathy, who's the best person to talk to get access in that building? Because like I said, when I first started, I went in there. You are? Okay, good. Because, I mean, I think it'd be interesting for me just to see it again at some point. Maybe Ian, you can come with me.
I was just in there last week with somebody else interested in doing other than apartments, which is what we've been looking for. But
sure.
He just, and I contacted Ian to connect him with the basketball people.
Okay.
Again, $3 million is what people are telling us, and unfortunately...
I just like to see what the size of the facilities are.
Yeah,
like, what is each wing, like,
space-wise?
You know, because I have to kind of, in my own mind, like, okay.
33,000 square feet.
33,000, but
yeah.
It'd be nice to see the dimensions still. If you have time sometime, maybe we can run in there and just take a look again.
Absolutely.
Okay, and winter's always the best time to go because it's not quite as humid, I think, usually.
It's freezing in there, though.
Freezing's okay. I can handle that, but the summertime.
Yeah, you just let me know when you want to get in there.
Okay, thanks, Kathy.
Sorry, that up.
So.
All right, so you had a, was there a second to your motion, Dan?
Not yet.
I'll second it.
We have a motion of second for paying $2,500 and giving them some input and then waiting.
Yep.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Dodge County Housing, just a reminder, Ian, we only got about 15 minutes left.
Oh, dear. Okay. All right, so I won't go through the entire 250-something page report in the next 15 minutes, but.
You can do that at your leisure.
Oh, yeah, do that at your own.
You're tired and you need something to read.
Need a high-end.
Summary pages, though.
Yeah, yeah, the worst, I was planning to go through the presentation that the folks at Maxfield prepared.
Yeah, go ahead.
And presented to the Dodge County Board of Commissioners last month, but, so. Again, this study was done for all of Dodge County, so some of the numbers you'll see throughout the report are more countywide, but they do also specifically break it down into each of the municipalities, including Casson. So just keep that in mind as we go throughout everything. Let's see, so yeah, project scope, all of Dodge County, each of the municipalities, some of the trends that they've seen coming throughout the last many years, population trends, yes, all good stuff, maybe a little bit slower, but still, you know, positive growth throughout the whole county. Let's see here, I have to look at my computer, sorry, it's too far away. yes, job growth, 3% growth in the county following the COVID years, still solid growth is projected as far as jobs go, 7% is projected. Let's see, average wages are slightly lower than the region as a whole, and let's see here, 57% of jobs in the county are filled by workers commuting into the county. So like me, I live in Rochester, but I commute into Dodge County. I'm one of the 57%, yes. Let's see, so this one here, and then I'll find the columns here. Okay, you'll see in 2023 there was a huge spike. That's the multifamily housing. Yeah, so that's this is Casson's direct impact on housing in our county. So pretty impressive to see there. Let's see, going on, they talk about differences between the conditions for the for sale market versus rental housing versus senior housing. I think one of the big takeaways there is that there's a huge demand for senior housing. That's just not available in Dodge County, and a lot of that is the senior folks who live in their regular single family houses want to stay in the community, but there's just not a lot available as far as senior housing goes. And so on the flip side of that, there's not the housing availability for younger folks to move in and take over those housing units that would otherwise be available. So cost burden analysis there, and let's see, affordability based on the income, you can see that there. Oh yeah, this page I thought was interesting. Let's see, so forecasting the next 10 years, a demand for 981 housing units. So just about half of that, a little over half, is for single family homes. 168 for multifamily, 140 market rate rentals, 53 affordable rentals, and 117 subsidized rentals. And then they say excess demand for 1,123 senior housing units in 2035. So pretty amazing there. That's wild.
100 a year.
Yeah. For the whole county, of course, but still, you can imagine that Casson is probably half of that demand, for sure, yeah. Yep. Let's see. And then, yeah, this is a little bit more of a breakdown. So, like we said, for the senior housing, 554 specifically in Casson, 150 owner-occupied housing units, or sorry, 150 rental, and then 419 owner-occupied housing units.
Basically, 40 houses a year, single-family houses a year, and, you know, maybe one or two more apartment-style kind of complexes, mm-hmm. and then the seniors, where there's a huge pent-up group, 50 a year there, just in Casson. So,
mm-hmm.
you're looking close to 100 units total each year in Casson mm-hmm. for the next 10 years.
It looked like they were really, I mean, looking at the numbers, it looked like active adult was a really big part of that for Casson.
No, I think, and that's something that we've seen,
yeah.
the 55-plus, like, yeah. community, not so much like the memory care or
facility. Right.
It's more of the 55-plus where, you know, the kids are out of the house now, they want to downsize, but they still want to be able to go play pickleball and, you know, jogging and all the different things, and maybe they don't have all the medical issues yet. They might have, you know, in 15 years or whatever.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, that definitely seems like, and, you know, I think, like, I know, for example, Bigelow, you know, they built a lot of those, kind of, even in the Southwest, you know, they've got the kind of two-twos, where it's kind of the, you want to call it a garage house or whatever, but it's two-bedroom, two-bathroom, slab on grade.
Yeah.
And that's a popular model. I mean, it's a little tight for, you know, being with a family, but for somebody who doesn't have kids anymore, like, that seems to be kind of like, and those are still going for $389,000, $400,000, you know, and I don't know if they are 1,200 to 1,500 square feet, pretty much. So I would expect that area definitely to be some demand, maybe some communities. You know, one thing I see when we go out of town, we go to Wisconsin, we go to wherever, visit my family, it's like where they have like a subdivision where it's not quite a gated community, but it's like a, you know, a PUD. It's like a, hey, this is, you know, Glen Haven, and here's the pickleball courts that we pay for, and you pay your HOA, and we mow for you, and we do all those things just in the middle of town still. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And then just this last page here, I thought they gave a few different ways to keep housing costs down, and they say public and private partnerships, maximize infill and redevelopment opportunities, evaluate development regulations and processes, and then increase supply and increase variety. So just a little summary there of everything. Yeah, all in all, glad that we have this housing study available now. I do get asked for housing study data from time to time, and you know what they were saying, that we didn't have like an updated one, so it's good that we have this now. As of this morning, it's linked on our city website, so available for everyone to see. Yes, thank you.
Other business?
It does sound like there's another restaurant going into the Daniels Plaza.
Okay.
Ooh.
It's not disclosed who it is because it sounds like it might be a franchise, but
ooh.
It will.
Yeah. Well.
Franchise. He was already switching out the Coke to Pepsi.
Oh, that's a clue.
Yeah. Tim, you might do what you want.
It happened.
I think the NW at this point. I actually heard that they sounded like we got maybe somebody interested in the old Moose, Smiling Moose, too. Is that
oh, right? Yeah, yeah. We did get it, I think.
Summit, maybe?
Excellent. Yes, they did submit so I can talk about it. yeah, Sandbox Coffee is what it's called. So the coffee shop basically is going to go into the Smiling Moose space, as well as a indoor sandbox, perhaps, for children to play in.
Sure.
Which is interesting, yes.
Just need donuts.
Bring your kitty.
Fine, do you have donuts?
Yes.
Well, you go start it, Tim.
He wants pizza ranch.
You
could. Yeah. I need some more things to do.
Well, that's exciting.
That's
good.
Exciting, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that Daniel's spot is such a good
yeah.
Yeah.
Make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
They'll probably come through with a sign request again next year.
Whatever. Hey,
if it works,
one of these times it's gonna work.
Right.
stick, yes.
All right.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other items for next?
January, we'll have that site. We'll bring that site.
Yep.
I think that'll be good, because then we can, and I mean, I really appreciate the feedback today for Ray, because maybe it would be good if we can test them with something and say, hey, you guys should really look at this
and
for us.
Maybe you could have Ray come chat about it.
Yeah.
Have hear from us again, if they got time.
Yeah.
In the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
That, I guess I would take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Didn't mean to rush you out of here, but.
Oh, you gotta go.
You gotta leave.
I have to go, Dan. This is.